Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special edition of The Shameless Plug, the monthly spin-off show from the Empire podcast, in which I sit down with Empire editor Nick Desemlian. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya.
And we go through the latest issue of Empire magazine, which in this case is the summer 2026 edition, issue 454, which has aliens on the cover. 40 years of aliens, folks. But you know what? What was that you were doing? Sorry?
Well, Aliens doesn't really have a catchy theme tune, but it does have a bit at the beginning. Where Ripley's in cryosleep, where it's like a...
That one?
That one. It's very catchy. It's a real earworm.
It's a real... Yeah, James. Listen, it's a great James Horner score. It's a great James Horner score. As we will discuss, it's just one of the many things we're going to discuss about Aliens over the next 45 minutes to an hour or so, because we decided to do a shameless plug with a difference, Nick. I was away last month when you did the shameless plug.
We renovated.
You did it with James Dyer.
We came up with a new format.
I didn't like it. I haven't listened to it. Didn't like it. But I didn't like having James Dyer on the podcast. Isn't that right, James?
That is right.
That is absolutely... Oh, shit! Yeah, here you are.
I never left. I've been sitting here the whole time.
He's just burst out of my stomach.
Yeah, it's true. This is the shameless plug.
The stomach
burst. I am here, so I am the shameless butt plug.
Yes. Oh, no. Why?
I'm sorry.
Why? No. So we have decided to do something slightly different for this episode of the shameless plug, and that we've decided to devote nearly the entire running time of this podcast. There's lots of great stuff inside the issue. Of course there is. You don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to Chris Evans. He knows what he's talking about. But on the cover is Aliens, celebrating 40 years of Aliens. Mm. And for this, we gathered together some people who know Aliens inside and out. Some of them were even in the film. One of them even wrote the film. But I would argue that very few people on this planet know the 1986 motion picture Aliens better than James Dyer. And you got to sit down on Zoom because they won't allow you within 50 yards of them, any of these people, with Sigourney Weaver, who I believe plays Ripley.
Correct.
Ripley.
Believe it or not.
Believe it or not. Jeanette Goldstein.
Yes.
Who plays Vasquez.
Yes.
Who else?
Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn, who plays Hicks.
Yes.
And James Francis Cameron.
Who's he? Who did he play?
He will amount to nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
He was the alien queen.
Yes. And so we were thinking, should we do a podcast talking about how awesome Aliens is? And then we thought, why not combine that with the shameless plug? So that's kind of what this is.
It might be our most shameless episode so far.
Oh,
you could say
that.
This issue is a celebration of James banging on about aliens for 40 years.
Yeah.
Until you finally go, well, if you put it on the cover and you can talk to all these people, will you shut the fuck up?
Yeah. Well, look, we've done some retro covers recently and they've done really well. People love them. We did The Lord of the Rings in January for the anniversary, 25 years. And we did Jaws last summer.
Jaws. Mm-hmm.
For 50 years of Jaws.
Great.
And we were chatting and Alex actually suggested 40 years of Aliens, Alex Godfrey, our features editor, and it didn't take much thought to immediately say, yes, we should do this.
Didn't take much thought.
It didn't take much thought to say, let's do it.
There wasn't a lot of debate. We were like, yes, let's do this thing. More specifically, I was saying, yes, let's
do this. Why wasn't
this
on the agenda in the first place? Like, it's one of your favorite films, it's one of my favorite films, it's one of your favorite films, it's one of our favorite films.
It's hard to keep track of all the anniversaries, and actually Sigourney Weaver was just, shameless plug, holding this very issue on
Jimmy Fallon.
He held this cover aloft, but she was saying how she hadn't really clocked that it was the 40th anniversary until we asked her to do this. So,
For reasons unknown?
For reasons unknown. We homed in on its beacon. That's going to happen a lot. I
didn't get that one.
Yeah, but there we go.
Not for reasons unknown. So when she's doing the debriefing after she comes back from...
When she loses when Van Leeuwen is talking to her.
It's a catchy line.
What you want to say, Nick, is, can I read? Yes, honey. I think we both can. Right, look, it's the best issue we've ever done, hands down. I think that goes without saying.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
It's not even close. It is the greatest issue of Empire in our entire history. And it's wonderful. And until this point, like my high point aliens-wise was being, of course, the lead in Aliens Expanded, the four-hour documentary about aliens, which Ian Nathan directed. And
Of this parish.
In which I feature quite prominently. And I screen grabbed the credits, because the credits, if you pause it just right, you can have my name and James Cameron's name on the screen at the same time.
I thought you were gonna say you can see your penis.
It's not bobbing, all the right moves.
Bobbing into view as you talk about aliens.
Yes. I mean, look, I don't want to say that, but yeah, so I'm on the screen with Cameron and Weaver and all the people that you spoke to, and I'm on the screen. That's very exciting. But
is it true, James, that the Nath wanted you for that documentary because Paul Reiser said no and he wanted a Burke?
Yes, that's accurate.
Didn't know where that was going, but it disappointed me still.
Yeah.
But yes, no, this was exciting. Obviously, we couldn't do this without James Cameron, so he was the first person that we went to.
Yeah.
And he said yes, as he often does. I once interviewed James Cameron back during lockdown, and he said at the end of the interview, my motto is anything for Empire, or our motto at Lightstorm is anything for Empire. And he's actually... seems to be true, because
really
we asked quite a lot of him.
And he always says yes.
You know, we interviewed him a lot for the last Avatar film, and I spent 2 days annoying him in New Zealand. He didn't say no to that even. And he said yes to this as well, despite being an extremely busy man. And
He did say on the condition that it is not you that does the interview, he is happy to talk to us.
He did. Yeah. He did qualify with that. But it was terrific. And then we went to Sigourney Weaver. And it all happened really quickly. It all
very came together quickly.
Extremely quickly. Yeah. And it was a shame. There was one person who we wanted to do it and was up for it.
Can we say who that is?
Can join it. Yeah,
we can say. It's Carrie Henn, who played Newt. And she would do it, but she's a teacher now. And she was teaching her fourth grade class. So she literally would have had to have dialed in to the Zoom chat from school and been surrounded by fourth graders. And she was like, that's probably inappropriate.
Well, James Cameron actually suggested.
He did.
Yeah.
He did suggest. Can we FaceTime her in the call?
He was up for it.
Yeah.
But she's, that would
she's
have been
a consummate
fun,
professional.
But she was like, I gotta teach. Teachers gotta teach. It came together really quickly, and you got like an hour.
I did. It was an hour, five-way chat. I say chat. Really, they sat there and listened to me talk at them for an hour. But
that was my worry. Whenever I heard that you were doing this,
it was mostly you reading the screenplay to them, including all the stage directions.
I was genuinely worried that they wouldn't get a word in.
Yeah, there was definitely a risk of that. Weirdly, I was very aware that that was a risk, and so I did the opposite. And genuinely, I tried to be as unobtrusive as humanly possible during this interview. I really just sort of teed up talking points, asked a question, and then tried to sit back and almost fade into, you know, like Homer Simpson with the hedge. I tried to reverse out of shot and just be invisible and let them talk to each other, because the joy really wasn't them answering my questions, it was them just the interplay and the banter between them, because they don't see each other very often. You know, haven't seen each other really, haven't been together since the 30th anniversary. So they're catching up and they're chatting, you know, what's Paul Reiser doing? Oh my God, Rico Ross is doing this. And I'm just sitting there with the world's biggest grin on my face, fully nude. And and it's an extraordinary experience for me. Like, this is like my dream come true. I literally rented Aliens over 50 times from my local video store, which was Ritz Video.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where they were like, dude, we could sell you the tape. It would be cheaper. Like, this is costing you a fortune. What are you doing? But I was obsessed with it. It was a film. I just couldn't get enough of it. And if you had told me then what I would be doing for this issue, my head would have exploded.
Would you have known? If someone said to you when you were, what, 9, 10, by the way, one day you'll be interviewing James Cameron, Sigourney Weaver on Zoom. You'd go, I don't know who any
what's
of those people
Zoom?
Are. What's a Sigourney Weaver?
Futuristic, though, isn't it, Zoom?
Yeah. In fact, it's better than the video conferencing they have in the film. So
I've got an important question for you. Who was the first to be on the call?
Very
and
good
did
question.
You have awkward small talk?
That's always the worry with a group call, isn't it? Because you have to wait till everyone's there to start the interview. And the first person on the call was, in fact...
Oh, can we guess?
Go on.
James Cameron.
Sigourney Weaver.
Not James Cameron. It was Sigourney Weaver.
Oh.
She was on first. And we had a lovely chat. Actually, she was also, and this was, she was about 10 minutes early. So I was just like,
That's super punctual.
10 minutes of small talk. I'm going to die. But actually, she was delightful. And we had a lovely chat. So it was really nice. And
it's hard to make small talk with famous people. Like, it's hard because you
hard
don't have
small
much
talk
in
with
common.
You guys.
I did, when we did the Lord of the Rings issue a few months back, I interviewed, we sort of did paired interviews with different members of the fellowship. And I did John Rhys-Davies and Orlando Bloom. And John Rhys-Davies logged on early. So we ended up chatting about sushi in Austin, Texas, because he was in Austin. He was telling me his favorite sushi restaurant. I was like, it was actually great. He's a lovely guy. But it was surreal waiting for Legolas to appear.
Waiting for Gimli, the lesser known Beckett play.
sorry, back to you.
No, she was great. It was great. Michael Biehn dropped in next, then Cameron, and then Jeanette Goldstein. So it was it was a delight, and they were genuinely so pleased to see each other as well.
Do they not do the convention circuit? Do they not see each other all the time?
Do you know what they do the circuit? But I don't. Well, Cameron doesn't really, but they don't. I don't think they overlap, because they were talking about when they've most recently seen the film, and they'd often seen them at different places. I think Jeanette Goldstein and Michael Biehn had seen them at special kind of like convention type screenings, but obviously different ones in different places at different times. So no, I don't think they overlap that much. Obviously, Sigourney Weaver does those little films. What are they called? I believe it's Avatar. Mm. So she sees Cameron, I think, a decent amount. But
no,
I don't think she does.
There's a blue character who sounds a little bit like her, but I don't think.
You're right. That is a Na'vi.
Yeah, she's a 14-year-old girl.
So it can't be someone in her 70s to play.
I have another question for you, James. So you know probably more than any human on Earth or deep space about aliens. Was there anything you learned from this conversation?
Oh, there were definitely things I learned from this conversation. Yeah. A couple of the bits, because I did, my memory is terrible, but I know a decent about aliens, and I spent the weekend kind of pouring through. If no one's read it, J.W. Rinzler does this incredible Making of Aliens.
Oh, it's fantastic. Book,
and it is just, if you want a deep dive, it is wonderful.
My favourite bit is there's a list of taglines that the studio suggested.
And they're hilarious.
They are so awful. I'm going to actually look some of them up.
Yeah, actually, hold on, Chris. I'm going to bring it up as well. Give me a mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a dew. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good hands, give me a dew. Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today. Mountain Dew. Yes, you are absolutely right. There's a list of marketing kind of taglines and subtitles that they'd suggested that the team had come up with, which obviously Cameron was like, fuck no. And they include, but are not limited to, Aliens, the darkest side of space, Aliens, the people eaters. I don't even understand that. Aliens, they want us, which sounds like porn. Aliens, there's nothing nice about them.
That sounds like the magic faraway tree.
Aliens meet the mother of them all. Aliens terror on LV-326. I didn't even get the name of the planet right.
I got to say, meet the mother of them all is quite strong.
Aliens, the last one was only the first one. Aliens, the scream continues, which sounds like a comedy.
Oh my God.
And aliens, they can't live without us. And I mean, I guess that's technically true, but also for subtitles, these were taglines. For the subtitles, they had Back and Out of Control, which sounds like a madcap sex comedy.
My God.
The Space Cannibals, doesn't make sense. The Death Travelers, it feels like it's like a meme science fiction title generator that they've used to create this stuff, except it was before the internet.
And of course, the ultimately landed on.
I love that there's someone at 20th Century Fox in a room coming up with these dreadful things, and every like 2 days he comes out and goes, I got one!
I would pay real money to have seen Cameron's face when he saw this list.
They can't live without us. Because think about it, guys.
This was back in the day when Cameron wasn't James Cameron, not really. No. I mean, he'd just come off the Terminator, but he didn't have the power to go, guys, you can't do the Death Travelers.
No, he was dealing with tea ladies, and grumpy tea ladies,
and grumpy
crew, and all kinds of British knobs who were making his life difficult. So
Cameron is the original Union Buster, it turns out, because
it was a hellish shoot, right?
Our headline
is War Stories, and it's kind of it works on two levels.
Absolute nightmare shoot.
Because
it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't actually Cameron's fault. Like, there were a number of things. I think ultimately he was completely unprepared for the very rigid unionized rules of the British crew. Like, when they say we're having a tea break and it lasts 15 minutes, they will literally stop mid-scene, walk out and have their bun and their cup of tea. A little tea lady would come in and that was it. And I think Cameron, because he had such passion, such vision, he was like, I don't understand how you can drop everything in the middle of the scene to go and have a cup of tea. And I think he just lost his mind. He saw them as lazy and unprofessional. I think the difference is that that's just how they worked. And you've got a man there who was prepared to bleed to make this film happen. Like, it was his passion project, his everything. But for a lot of these guys, it's just a job. Like, they weren't prepared to kind of like work nonstop for it. So yeah, I think it was a bit of a rude awakening for him. And there was a point where, people rebelled because like after being undermined repeatedly, Cameron fired Derek Cracknell, who was like the first AD. And when they did that, the whole crew just downed tools and mutinied. And I think it took Gale Ann Hurd and to a certain extent Sigourney Weaver to come and talk them all down and actually get them back on board. And he had to rehire Cracknell. It was the whole thing. So I think Cameron was extremely pleased when he finally finished his film for a great many reasons. I think he famously said that, you know, when he left the gates, he said, the only thing that kept me going is knowing that when I go out of here, I'm never going to see you fuckers again and you're going to be stuck here for the rest of your lives. Goodbye. And he just left. But despite that, he's very happy to talk about it. He's very engaging. He has fond memories of, I think, maybe the film itself more than the process of making it. But it is incredible. It's like, as I say, it's my all-time favorite film. So I think it's marvelous.
Because a lot of people probably don't know. I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably do know. It was shot here.
It was shot in
this studio, actually.
Literally here.
It was shot in London. Where was it, Pinewood or Shepperton?
It was shot at Pinewood, and it was also shot at Acton Power Station, which was where the Alien Hive is.
Yes.
And obviously the famous anecdote being that when they turned up to shoot the chemical plant in Batman, Tim Burton's Batman, the Alien Hive was still there because it had never been disassembled. It was all in place. Yeah, true story.
So people were just walking around.
Yeah, they were like, "Hey, man, it's dry heat." That was it.
We'll get on to the film itself and why we love the film and things we love about the film in a second. But there were other tempestuous things that happened during the shoot. James Remar was cast as Hicks.
Yes, he was.
Initially, and he did what? The first 2 weeks of shooting?
Yeah, and you can still see him in the film. Like, there's still shots of James Remar from behind in the film until he was arrested for drugs possession, which obviously didn't go very well. And he had to go back to the US and go into rehab. And so Michael Biehn, who Cameron worked with on The Terminator, he just literally called him up and said, "Michael, get over here." And Michael got on a plane, flew in. And also, great that he did. Remar's a great actor, but Biehn, I think, brings something very distinctive to the role of Hicks. Like, he's very quiet, he's very sensitive, he's very reserved, very thoughtful. Yeah. And he does feel, because he didn't have the bonding with the cast, he does feel apart from the rest of the Marines, which actually works really well for that character.
So he's wearing Remar's costume, isn't he?
Yeah, they all decorated their own armor. Yeah. And there's a Remar's things that he put on there, the heart and the padlock. And Biehn famously did not enjoy that. He did not like the decorations on the armor and he wanted them changed. And Cameron went, "Yeah, that's not happening."
Because we need to match the things that we're going to use.
Just get on with it. It's fine.
I think it's one of the great recastings. We don't really talk about that often. We get this question quite a lot in the podcast, you know, the great recastings and Eric Stoltz and Back to the Future and Stuart Townsend and Lord of the Rings. In fact, we had this, I think just the other week, we were talking about this on the pod. And I don't think we talked about Michael Biehn in this movie.
I don't think we did.
And he's terrific in this. And, you know, he's one of the hearts of the movie. If a film can have multiple hearts, I mean, obviously Sigourney Weaver's front and center, then there's Carrie Henn, then there's Lance Henriksen, but all the Colonial Marines make an impact.
Even
the grunts who have like maybe one or two lines, they will make an impact.
We talked about this actually, because you're right that like you've got a very large supporting cast and most of them don't really make it out of the middle of the film, the initial incursion into the Hive. So you lose the vast majority of them. But
you're down to what, six by that point? Yeah.
But you feel like you know them because they have, and by modern filmmaking standards, you think it's quite luxurious, but you have that long period where the Sulaco, the ship, is flying to the planet. They wake up from hypersleep and you hang out with the Marines. Like, they're working out, they're bantering, they're
dinner
insulting each other,
scene,
having dinner, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you get a real sense for who they are and the interplay between them. So you actually feel it when they die. "Oh no, Apone!" Like, you know who he is. And that's extraordinary.
Where's
Baskey?
Al Matthews is amazing.
Al Matthews, yes.
The late Al Matthews is amazing as Apone.
An actual vet as well. I think, and he was very much a sergeant.
Oh, so he looked after animals.
Yes, he did. He loved a dog.
Okay.
He was kind of like the sergeant on screen and off as well. Like, he wrangled the troops, I think, a lot of the time.
"Look into my eye.
Fall in, people." Another glorious day in the Corps. Day in the Marine Corps is like a day on a farm.
I remember you started when we were at Comic-Con one year. I remember you starting every day with that and me wanting to murder you.
That was very we started one of the Fitty Bloggy shows, didn't we?
With an alien spoof.
Nick, James is going full James here and not letting anyone else have a word?
No. Yeah.
Do you like Aliens?
I love Aliens. Aliens is a really special film for me because it was like one of the first 18s I saw, and it was on a videotape floating around at my school. Someone had recorded it off the TV or something, and I remember like some of us would get together and watch it. Sometimes it felt very illicit because it was, you know, it was gory and it was intense and it was fun. It was like one of the first films where I felt like a real kind of genuine danger watching it, and I love it. I still love it now. I've seen it not as many as James, but I've seen it dozen times.
Okay.
James has seen it a dozen times
this week.
Also, like, but like at the same time as I discovered Aliens, I discovered Alien War, and that's another thing I got to do. That was a bucket list thing for me in this issue.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've been banging on about Alien War, so I went when I was like 15. You know what this is?
What is it?
So, in London, when there used to be the Trocadero at Piccadilly Circus, which was amazing. The Trocadero, if you went there in the 90s, you'll never forget it.
Arcade machines.
Harrier jump jet hanging from the roof. There was like a ride that dropped you down like three floors.
It's where the Picture House Central is now.
Yes, true. Yeah. And then, best of all, in the basement, if you went down, there was basically, you could be in the movie Aliens. And it was done so well. It was actual props and costumes from the film. These two guys that I talked to this month for this issue, Gary and John, from Scotland, the two Scottish guys, and they had the idea, we're going to do an Aliens-themed interactive like thrill ride. And basically, you turned up in the Trocadero, you got put in a group, you were basically being given a tour of an off-world base by a colonial marine, and then it goes wrong, and you start legging it around, and aliens are jumping out at you, and I cannot emphasize enough, it was fucking terrifying. And the best bit of all, which I talked about with them in the article, is they put a ringer in with your group who looks like a tourist, but is an actor. And at a certain point in the tour, when you're running around, this person gets grabbed by an alien and yoinked and dragged away screaming. And you think it's just a gut, like one of you. So it was amazing. They had an APC. And they had the marine had the motion tracker, and there was like a chair in the APC would come up and there'd be an alien underneath it. There were pulse rifles, which they synced to the actual sounds, and they had speakers hidden around the place, and there was muzzle flash. It was amazing. They did it so well. So I got to talk to them and got the whole story of how they put it together. And Sigourney Weaver turned up on opening night in, I think, mid-1995 with a flamethrower.
there's an amazing picture of that.
Lance Henriksen turned up. Apparently he was a wuss. Apparently he was terrified.
Wow.
And there's great stories about celebrities that went on there.
I never went. I always wanted to go, and I never went. And that was one of my big regrets from like the 80s and 90s. I never got to go to Alien War.
Tony Blair went on it. There's a photo of Tony Blair with an Alien War mug.
Amazing.
He came out going, we need to destroy these aliens within 45 minutes.
But who else? Kylie Minogue went on it. Suggs. Apparently Michael Barrymore went every week. And Michael Jackson almost went on it, but then his bodyguards did it and they decided it was too scary for him. So they told him not to do it. Wow. But the stories are amazing. Like, genuinely, it's one of those things that anyone who ever did it will never forget it. And most exciting of all, we reveal in this article, they're bringing it back.
Office outing.
What?
100%.
Oh yeah, I've already told them we want to do an office outing.
Yeah.
We can try it out. But they're going to use new tech, and I mean, it was amazing back in the 90s.
Newt tech?
Possibly. Newt tech. But anyway, yeah. See you down there, Tony Blair.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, he's tough on aliens, tough on the causes of aliens.
Genuinely, it was like when we did the Terminator issue last year, the anniversary issue of Terminator, and I got to talk to the guy who did Arnie and the Terminators on Top of the Pops.
Oh, Steve Fry.
Novelty song. The other guy.
Oh, okay.
But this was a real treat for me, I got to say. I was as excited talking to these guys as you were talking about to James Cameron.
So, this is incredible.
Shout out to them.
Yeah, geniuses. I think this is a top 10 film for me of all time. Certainly top 20.
I should
20.
Hope so.
we've had this aliens discussion a lot on the podcast. And why do you have to choose but as aliens?
It is. It's without shadow.
For me and for you. Yeah. Nick, where do you stand on the debate?
Aliens.
Yes.
Yeah?
Aliens.
Yeah. Okay.
Unanimous.
Ghostbusters 2. Aliens.
What? Can we please excuse Nick from this debate now?
No, I'm not joking.
In the 80s, the sequels were often better. Lethal Weapon 2.
It's so much fun. That's the thing. Is like, it works as a horror. It's got really scary stuff in it, like the first one does. And it's got great world building, but it's just a roller coaster ride. Like, it's so exciting and so fun. And it's got, you know, the Cameron tells the story of the premiere where he didn't know if the Alien Queen sequence was going to work, and everyone just exploded. Like, everyone was cheering. And, you know, when she comes out in the Power Loader suit.
Yeah.
Talking of the Power Loader suit, we also spoke in this issue to John Richardson, the special effects supervisor, who I wouldn't say created, because James Cameron kind of came up with them, but he designed the pulse rifle and the Power Loader and the flamethrower and all this other, like, amazing, iconic tech. I mean, It's probably got the coolest weapons of any film.
I love it. I love the
Star
sounds.
Star Wars might beg to differ.
Yeah, in terms of iconic, but I love the sounds of the pulse rifles and the smart gun, which is essentially like a steady cam that kills. It's extraordinary. But I think this is one of those films. I think one of the reasons it captivated me so much as a teenager is because it, like Star Wars, it works on so many different levels from a storytelling point of view, but also the music is on point. Bishop's Countdown has been used in like 80% of all trailers. So
it's also a funny film, right? Like Alien is a masterpiece, but it hasn't got many lulls.
No.
And Aliens has got, yeah, thanks to Bill Paxton, and they're just studded with tiny little bits of comedy. And
it's not just that though, Nick, for me. It's just great set piece after great set piece after great set piece. And like Alien, one of the things I love about it is that it takes its sweet fucking time. I think it's an hour before we even get an alien in Aliens. It's pretty much the same in Alien, of course. But it takes its sweet time. But once it starts going, my God, does it go. And you have just so many great set pieces, like I said. You have the first encounter with the aliens, James, as you were talking about, where they get their asses handed to them. And because obviously they can't use any weapons in there. What are we going to use, man? Harsh language. It's just such an incredible scene with Ripley helpless, watching on Gorman panicking. That's brilliant. You got the whole sequence in the med bay with Ripley and Newt and the face huggers, which is incredible. You have the tension of the aliens' assault on them when they're in the ceiling.
That sequence is incredible. 5 years, man. Four. What the hell?
You're not reading it right.
the tension there is off the actual
sound chain. Design as well. The little beep.
Well, they talk about that because they obviously have to do ADR for a lot of this stuff. Yeah. And the bit where they had to get Paxton into ADR, the bit during that sequence, and he was like, I don't know what the fuck I was, because he's improv'd all of it. He was yelling stuff. You want some of this? Fuck you! And he got into the sound booth and he just had to make it up and try and vaguely sync it with the lips, which I think is amazing.
Oh my God.
But he likes so much of his stuff in there. He's so funny. He's like Cowardly Hudson. It's game over, man.
Yeah.
It's game over.
Yeah, finally has his hero moment at the end, and I'm always sad when he gets pulled onto the floor. Yeah. Mm. Maybe he lived. And then it got obliterated in the nuclear blast.
Yes, exactly.
Just a few
minutes. There's quite a poignant bit in the interview, isn't there?
When they talk about, well, that's true, because like as comes up, it turns out Cameron spoke to Paxton the day before his operation, which unfortunately killed him. And he was quoting Hudson to him over the phone. I got a bad feeling about this, man. So that role did kind of stick with him. Like it's his most iconic role, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Paxton was amazing. He was a great actor, great director, but he'll always be known for Hudson.
Frailty is one of the most scary films.
It's really good.
And Sigourney Weaver, of course. I mean, you know, she's done amazing things in her career. Ghostbusters 2 being one of them, of course. But she's never, I think, going to be known as anything other than Ripley.
Well, Oscar nominated for this, this film, which is wild, because I don't think you would imagine a film like this getting an Oscar nomination for the lead actor.
But it fundamentally, I think, changed what female roles in films could be from an action perspective.
Was called Rambolina. Named Rambolina at the time.
But not just her, Jeanette Goldstein's role as Vasquez as well. It's extraordinary sort of like action-based female roles, which now don't seem that surprising, but back then, absolutely.
Well, female villain, female hero, you know, it's full of, you know, great female parts, if you call the Alien Queen
is a good part, it's true, yeah. Yeah,
but it's... it was definitely something really fresh for the genre, and still feels that. It doesn't feels progressive now.
This is the thing. It's like you look at the Alien franchise, and everything from Alien 3 onwards shows its age, because those were those really awkward early years of CGI where, hey, look, we can do stuff on computers. And it's like, you know, it doesn't look very good. Hasn't aged very well. Whereas because Aliens is basically all practical, it still looks pretty fucking good. And there's bits with the where he has the kind of video screen behind for the dropship crash, and there's some compositing stuff, you know. But do you know what? I there's nothing about that film I would change, not one frame.
It hasn't dated badly at all. And obviously it still kind of lives in pop culture. Avengers Infinity War, right?
Spider-Man calls it. That old movie.
Without Aliens, Spider-Man and Iron Man would not have got out of that.
True story.
The entire galaxy would have, you know, so Aliens has literally saved every planet and every single...
Ebony Maw, the last victim of the Alien Queen.
Yeah, Thanos would have won if not for this film.
Wow.
Well, he did win in that film.
Damn it!
I don't know if you've been paying attention, pal.
I fell asleep 10 minutes before the end. I assumed everything worked out fine. But yeah, it's obviously an Alien Romulus. They have a quite bad, quite clumsy reference to Aliens.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes to show that, you know, people are still referencing this film. They're still thinking about it. It's still very alive in pop culture and, you know. It's super fresh.
It's super fresh and super good. And I adore it. And it's not often we give the 14-page treatment something.
Very
so
rarely.
Why did you do that?
I mean...
Because I wouldn't stop.
Because James was aiming a pulse rifle at my head on press week. No, it just felt, you know, when else are you going to have James Cameron, Sigourney Weaver, Michael Biehn, Jeanette Goldstein, like, together on a chatting away of telling stories?
Oh, actually,
stories
later on, I forgot them at 6 o'clock.
So. Oh, right. Okay. Well, I would have only done 12 if I'd known. But yeah, we just wanted to supersize it. It just felt like a really nice chance to celebrate something that we haven't really done that much on. You know, in the magazine, like some films we sort of go back to, like Lord of the Rings, obviously. Yeah. We've done a lot of celebrations of that, and Star Wars and Indiana Jones. Mm. Aliens, you know, we've celebrated the franchise as a whole, but I don't think we've really done much in the way of just celebrating Aliens. So it was a really nice chance to...
I remember I was moderating a Q&A, a meeting on Zoom a couple of years ago, during the pandemic, certainly, between Edgar Wright and James Cameron. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that it was specifically about Aliens, or was maybe that was just like a chat between the two of them that I was there to oversee.
That was the issue that Edgar was kind of guest editing, where it was about people's cinema memories. And I remember James Cameron talked about Wait Until Dark,
right?
The Audrey Hepburn film, and he was talking about seeing that in the cinema, and some other stuff probably came up. But
no, I think this was specifically about Aliens because we talked about the power loader moment. We talked about how Cameron. Calibrated it. I remember Cameron going, you know, I had a moment of silence after she says, "Get away from her, you bitch," because I had a feeling audiences might go apeshit at that moment.
Yeah, no, I now remember.
Now he's remembering now.
I now remember, yeah, but it was, I don't know what happened to that bit, but we did something with it, but it was mostly about his cinema experiences, Cameron's, but then we also asked him about that one because that one had such a big reaction.
Right, okay.
But maybe it was... Oh, I think readers picked it. We did like a readers poll.
Remember.
Anyway.
Welcome to Shameless Plug, where we can't remember anything about what we did.
Welcome to the Senior Moment podcast.
Well, this is the thing. Like, if you'd said, you know, Jimbo, you were saying, if you'd said to yourself as a 9, 10-year-old watching Aliens for the first time, one day you'll interview James Cameron. And if you'd also said to us, one day you'll interview James Cameron so often that you won't remember...
I don't remember.
I mean, I definitely did, but I don't remember what we did with that. But that's something he said.
I have interviewed James Cameron a number of times, and every single time I've interviewed him, I have crowbarred in questions about Aliens unbidden. And
Sam Raimi and
genuinely scolded about it. Like, he literally, when I was talking to him, I was for the re-release of Terminator 2, he literally said, "Aren't we here to talk about, can we talk about Terminator 2? He just pulled me back. I'm like, I want to talk about Aliens.
So this was your pure shot.
This was like, I got this. I said, like, this is the one occasion you cannot stop me. I cannot be stopped. Like, we are just going to talk about Aliens. We're going to lock in. It's going to be amazing. And that is, of course, what happened. So,
how many years has it been since Piranha Flying Killers?
A while. Yeah.
Is there an anniversary coming up?
I don't think so. Do you think we need to do an oral history? Possibly
fit 16 pages.
I don't think necessarily.
I mean, there's probably some good stories.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are. What else is in the issue, Chris?
Oh, I don't know. I genuinely don't know because I was away while this issue was being locked down.
You were on
and,
a cruise. You were
released.
Reenacting. You were reenacting the film Speed 2 Cruise Control.
I was playing the Willem Dafoe role. I was going, faster, this is too slow. There's lots of great stuff. I mean, we don't have time to get into everything, Nick, but there's a Tim Allen and Tom Hanks interview, which has really caught my eye for Toy Story 5, which is coming out very, very soon. And we got Hanks and Allen together.
This is a bit of a dream thing. I think we've been trying to do this for probably like 3 Toy Story films. And it happened. It happened. We asked for it. And lo and behold, it happened. And Ollie Richards did it. And it's a really great Q&A with a very revealing story about their first meeting.
Right.
Didn't get on, apparently.
No!
Because Tom Hanks stole a chip. It's unclear whether it is a British chip, as in a French fry, or a chip, American chip, as in a potato chip, crisp, from... this anecdote is not going well. Tom Hanks stole a chip from Tim Allen's plate, and Tim Allen did not take kindly to it.
Tim Allen's had a chip in his shoulder ever since.
Indeed. Well, no, because Tom Hanks ate it.
Oh my God.
But yes, there's more of that kind of juicy scuttlebutt. It's no holds barred. But they are, they, you know, as you can imagine, they are lovely. And it's, they don't spend that much time together because they record their lines separately.
Yeah, I imagine they don't actually do anything together,
sort of,
right?
You know, cross paths and obviously link together forevermore.
Yeah.
As these characters. So it's a great, it's a really great chat.
Buzz Lightyear. But that makes sense, right? Like they didn't get on initially because Woody and Buzz don't get on together. Initially, at least. But yeah, they fixed it. So that's good. Yeah,
they battled Stinky Pete and...
This is amazing.
Yeah. I wrote about Scary Movie, the new Scary Movie.
I mean, no.
I got to say, I want to mention it because you may have interviewed James Cameron and Sigourney Weaver on Zoom. I had Anna Faris do a Riverdance jig for me on Zoom. It was a wonderful experience. I had a Zoom with Anna Faris, who I'd not spoken to before, but I've been a fan of because she's really funny. She is absolutely delightful. And it started with her being like, camera's on, I'm not sure. And then within 2 minutes, she was doing a Riverdance jig.
Oh my God.
Well, there's a reason for it, but you have to read the article to find out.
Oh my God, you're
doing the hard sell.
Yeah, look at that. It's wow. Incredible.
Just such a tease.
It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. It's a fantastic issue. I mean, at the center definitely is the aliens thing. But Jimbo, do you want to highlight anything else in this incredible issue of Empire Magazine that you don't have to hand right now?
That I literally don't have in front of me. And I'm now looking at you blankly thinking, what was in that issue?
What was in the issue?
I think you, as the person who is currently thumbing through the issue, are better placed.
All right, then. Yeah. Jesus H. Christ. So we have, let me see what else we have. We have an interview with Naomi Aki, which is fantastic. Why did you do Scary Movie, Nick? This is an interesting one.
Because it's a huge pop culture event. The Scary Movie franchise is like a $1 billion one. A lot of people love these films. And we're in a time where comedy is a real rarity on the big screen, especially successful comedy. So... people are predicting this is going to be one of the big hits of the summer, and it's a pure comedy. And I just think that's interesting, and it's worth digging into, that these guys are super successful. And yeah, so it was an interesting, and I just think it's a very interesting story within itself of like how the Wayans brothers kind of got thrown off the franchise, and now they're coming back. There's been big ups and downs.
And you spoke to the Wayans brothers
I spoke to Marlon and Sean Wayans for an hour together. It was really fun and interesting. And talked about all kinds of stuff in Living Colour and their other spoofs. And I talked to Regina Hall and Anna Faris. And
amazing.
Yeah. It's not a series that I love every bit of. Like Scary Movie 4 is one of the rare films I walked out of the cinema.
Was that your opening line?
They weren't involved with that one. But it's definitely had some ups and downs. But I also think, you know, it's a comedy and that should be kind of championed at this point because it doesn't happen much that we get comedy in the cinema.
We also sent John Nugent to Rome to talk to the boys.
When in Rome, talk to the boys.
Yep, as the old saying goes.
Yeah. That's another roundtable interview. That's a lot of fun.
The final season of the boys.
Yep, much talk of exploding penises.
Yeah.
I mean, but as always with John's interview.
I was going to say, as with all of them.
It's not too dissimilar from James's Aliens interview, to be fair.
Accurate.
In Beth's section, first word, there's a piece about Hollywood's new space age. Was that, Nick?
Yeah, that's kind of inspired by the Artemis mission and the fact that they watched Project Hail Mary and they were quoting Project Hail Mary from space. Amaze, amaze, amaze. And so we kind of took a look at that and how sci-fi, there's a new kind of trend of positive sci-fi with like For All Mankind and things getting more hopeful. And how that's kind of interlinking with the renewed interest in real-life space travel.
There we go.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Olivia Wilde talking about The Invite, which is excellent. We have Leo Woodall on his role in Tuner. And we have Bob Odenkirk with a truly legendary pint of milk. He's on very funny form in that one. We've got loads of reviews, as you might imagine. In my section, the final cut section, the best section in the magazine, we have Nia DaCosta talking about making 28 years later the Bone Temple. We have a ranking of Jurassic Park featuring Jurassic Park movies, not just a ranking of Jurassic Park, although you'll never guess what number one is, featuring Nick. Nick is in that. Ben Wishaw is the time capsule. That was a real treat to do with him. And there's some other amazing things in there as well. Stephen Frears on My Beautiful Laundrette. Loads of wonderful, wonderful things. Obviously, at the center is the Aliens interview I hesitate to call it an interview. It's just someone gushing at four random strangers on the internet, which I believe you usually have to pay a small fortune. Yeah. But this is good. You got to do this for free.
Needless to say, they've all blocked me on social media. It's understandable.
So, fantastic film, fantastic issue. It is on sale right now in all good and evil newsagents, plus virtual newsagents, right? Well, people can get this virtually. Also, it is a cracking issue of Empire, more cracking by the fact that I did fuck all for this issue.
That's why it's so good.
So I am not there to sully it with my words.
Did we mention the cover art? I just want to give a shout out to Paul Shipper. Created both the chilling Alien Queen subs cover,
holding it up now,
and the flamethrower-tastic newsstand cover,
as seen on Fallon Tonight.
Yeah, but you can't have everything.
The subs cover, I love the subs cover. He did a really lovely sort of like green-tinged artwork of the Alien Queen. If you happen to be an Empire subscriber, then you should treasure it and frame it and keep it for posterity.
Nick, why is it illustrated? Why did you not use existing art?
Because it's 40 years old and we wanted to create something fresh.
Fresh and cool.
And so it was we did the same thing with Jaws. We actually, Paul Shipper did that as well. He's an amazing artist. He's done lots for Empire, but he really can create a beautiful piece of art that really captures the energy of the film. And so that's what we did.
Not for reasons unknown. Those reasons have been explained.
They have.
Yeah. Fantastic. Guys, it's been a pleasure. I could talk about aliens with you guys all day long, but the magazine is happening.
We have another issue, we're a week away from finishing, and it's another good one. It's alien free. it's alien free.
This time special. For
sure. Yes. Oh, yeah, we put David Fincher in a room.
Don't get me started on Alien 3. I mean, I can admire it as a piece of filmmaking for the most part.
It's okay. It's not
what it does to aliens.
That's
unforgivable.
Why it's unforgivable. But as a film, the assembly cut is actually halfway decent. But if we're talking cuts. Before we go.
Oh, no.
Theatrical or special edition?
Aliens. Oh, theatrical.
Theatrical. I do like a Century Gun.
Yeah, but, we're in agreement, actually. I know Cameron will stump for the special edition, but I do think that while some of the scenes definitely add to it, a couple of them, the Hampster one in particular, do detract.
Seeing the colonists ahead of time, like, that's not good.
I think the masterstroke, and this was Gail Ann Hurd who suggested this, was to lose that whole sequence because when you're going to LV-426, you have no idea. I mean, you do, because the film is fucking called Aliens. But you genuinely have no idea what's waiting for them. Whereas if you've seen the comic, you know what's happening. And I think it diffuses some of the tension there.
Yeah. That dropship scene is so fantastic. It's like that's been done a million different times in different like war films and war TV shows, having the dropship like going down into something.
We're on an express elevator to hell.
Yeah.
Going down.
They nailed it. It's the ultimate that you can't beat that. It's unimprovable. Yeah. That sequence is so exciting. And it's the fact you're going down and you don't know what the hell is waiting for them. And it's so cool.
Yeah.
And like even the planet surface is like, God. Wow. Let's go watch it now.
Let's go and watch Aliens.
When they're the slow build, but going through the colony and there's obviously no one around. I'm not sure if they found Newt by this point, you know, but you have all the specimens in the jars and such a sense of dread and unease and he likes you, Burke, you know, all that stuff. Oh, it's so...
It's like love. It's very sad to me.
The scene with the facehuggers where they're trapped in and Burke has closed it.
Oh, yeah, what a Burke.
Bastard.
What a Burke.
What an absolute fucking Burke. And we haven't even really talked about the end of the movie, because the end of the movie is just one of the great endings of any movie. Ripley versus the Alien Queen is iconic. Bishop's Countdown. I still, to this day, when I watch that movie, get an adrenaline rush when they're getting onto the dropship and Bishop appears, you know, and Ripley is forlorn because they've gone. And
she's about to jump over the
barriers, and then Bishop appears out of nowhere. James Horner cranks it up. They get on the ship just as the LV-426, just as the colony's about to explode.
Spoiler for Aliens.
Yeah, well, fucking hell. You've seen this movie by now. And then they get away just in the nick of time, and then this nuclear explosion, because of course it's a nuclear explosion because it's James Cameron, goes off behind them, and it's just... absolute fucking cinema. And you think, well, that's it, the movie's over. But no, It's not over.
No.
There's more to come.
It's pretty good. But is it the best exotic marigold hotel?
Why?
I don't know.
Why have you said that?
I don't know.
How can we stop you?
It's definitely better than the second best exotic marigold hotel.
It's a tie with the first. We're agreed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It'll be 40 years of the second.
Just it's 15 years.
The entire cast will be dead.
No, they're still going strong.
Not in 40 years they won't be. Don't wrap this up. This is my show.
I have to go and do things.
I'm going to keep you here. You don't get to wrap this up. James, filibuster some more.
I'm locking the door. Right. Let's go through Aliens scene by scene. Now, the first scene, which is, of course, the scene where the ship is picked up, the lifeboat from the Nostromo, the Narcissus, is good for a number of reasons.
Nick has actually taken off his headphones. He is walking out.
Oh, I'm going to find a face hugger so I can be chest bursted and end my suffering.
Anyway, listen, thank you for listening to this episode of The Shameless Plug. We may be back to regular service next month. I don't know, because you guys did something weird and funky last month as well, which we might do that again. Who knows? We might do a listener question thing that we did 2 months ago. It's a changeable feast. It's a movable feast. Who knows? We'll do something different. Anyway, in the meantime, goodbye, James.
Can I dream?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks.
We all can. It's good.
Not bad for a podcast.
Oh, Bishop. Have you ever done the knife thing?
Oh, yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do it with Nick. I put my hand over his.
Very
he's
much
like, whoa,
my
not
will.
Me, man.
I guess he didn't like the cornbread either.
Not sped up, that sequence. Literally
that's
not sped
not
up.
True. That's not true. That's not such sped up. Fucking yeah. Bullshit. That
Lance
is
Henriksen,
nonsense.
Legend.
No, nope, nope. That is sped up. There's nope. You cannot.
That,
no.
That happened.
I call chicanery on that. That's absolutely sped up.
The word is that it in fact was not.
Fucking get me on that Zoom. Get me on that Zoom with Jim Cameron. That's nonsense.
He did cut Bill Paxton's pinky.
Goodbye, Nick.
This podcast has very much been an express elevator to hell going down, and it has been a ride. So thank you both.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's goodbye for me. Oh, and one last thing. Somebody wake up, Hicks. Bye-bye.